I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. The Federal Trade Commission accused the entertainment industry yesterday of what sounds like stealth marketing of mayhem to the youth market that is supposed to be protected from raw sex and violence. The FTC report is now the basis for threats by Vice President Gore and his running mate Senator Lieberman to crack down on Hollywood if the Dream Factory doesn't clean up its own act. The New York Times calls it unworthy pandering by the Democrats, a betrayal of the protection of free expression. But doesn't it also sound like a staged spat between old intimates in Washington and Los Angeles? From Charlton Heston to Barbra Streisand, the stars and the money men of Hollywood seem to accept White House invitations from all sorts of presidents, except for conferences on violence in the media. Senator Lieberman, who has bashed the toxic cult of depravity in entertainment, has added some pressure here, but Jack Valenti brushes it all off on behalf of the movie industry as so much posturing. He said, if I were running for office, I'd be trashing the movie industry myself. Connection listeners, should Hollywood be shamed? Should it be scared? And what is the bond here of egos and interests in the politics of entertainment and the entertainment of politicians? Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. We're trying to decode the Democrats' war on garbage media. 1-800-423-TALK. Bernard Weinraub joins us from Hollywood. He covers the movie industry for the New York Times. From New York, Ken Oletta covers media for the New Yorker. The phone again, 1-800-423-TALK. Bernie Weinraub, good morning in Los Angeles.
Good morning.
What does Hollywood make of all this?
Well, I think certainly the vice president's comments were that people were interested, but I don't think people take it, to be honest, all that seriously. I think it's more political than anything else.
Political and phony, too?
Well, I don't know about phony. It's a political campaign, and, you know, and he's using this as an issue. What happens once he becomes president, is elected, is another issue. And I think, you know, certainly the vice president has enormous support in the movie business, in the whole entertainment business. And that support will not diminish because he's saying, let's take a tough stand on violent entertainment.
The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that Gore has three fundraisers this week featuring Hollywood celebrities. I mean, he's also supposed to be more than friendly with Jeffrey Katzenberg of the DreamWorks. I mean, talk about that bond a little bit. What is it about? And is it money, or is it something else?
I think the bond in some ways has a lot to do. Well, there are two issues. One issue is certainly people are supporting the Democratic Party, as they always have in Hollywood. And Gore is fairly popular here. He's certainly not as popular as President Clinton was, because President Clinton really enjoyed the entertainment business, came out here a lot, and really developed friendships with people out here. Vice President Gore hasn't done that at all. But I think, you know, there's a real issue here in terms of, you know, Gore can say these things, but people, I don't think, take that all that seriously.
Hollywood never sounds very proud of itself in moments like this. What does Hollywood, I mean, they sort of skulk about and they wait for the storm to pass. What is their notion of self-policing, or is that a joke too?
I don't think it's a joke. I think the lines get very blurry. I mean, the FTC had this report that was released just yesterday about, you know, how violent entertainment, and not just films, but video games and music, are marketed to kids, to younger kids, kids below 17. And I think the problem, certainly with films, is that you have an R-rated film that kids under 17 are not supposed to go to, and yet these films are marketed on MTV, on wrestling, on sports shows that a lot of kids watch. And they certainly know that, and as a result of that, these kids want to see these films.
Does Hollywood have any intention to restrain itself here?
I think there's a little bit of, I think there is some self-restraint. I think not everybody is cynical and, you know, and terrible about the whole thing. I think certainly making extreme some some places will always make extremely violent films, and other places, and other people feel very reluctant about that now. I think there is a little bit of self-policing going on, but the bottom line is it's all about dollars. And if somebody makes a very, very violent film and it makes a huge amount of money, then you'll see a spate of other violent films. What's happened in the last couple of years, though, is that there have been some really violent films coming out, and they haven't done very well. So I think there has been a kind of decline in those really violent films that we saw, say, 5-6 years ago.
Brittany Weinreb, stand by. If you would, Ken Oletta joins us from New York. He's written in depth about the media industries for years in the New Yorker magazine. Ken, this is an unregulated industry. What is its codependency with Washington and Washington with it, would you say? Is it about money or something more mysterious?
Well, I think, as my friend Bernie said, I mean, there is a predilection on the part of the entertainment people in the entertainment community to vote with the liberal Democrat, and Gore fills that bill this year as Clinton did before that. But I think if I were a doctor, which I'm not, and looking at these people and their behavior, that is to say the products they make, the violent, sexually oriented products they make, and the way they market them, I would have to say they're probably schizophrenics. And by that I mean to say that the very same people who make liberal speeches about their concern for children and embrace Hillary Clinton when she writes a book about making a village for children are the same people who by day go to the office and come up with these movies and these products, video games, music, etc., that oftentimes, and market them in ways that are explicitly meant to attract young children to go see them. And the fact that it has some influence on the children, how much is obviously debated academically, but the fact that it has some influence, no parent would deny. So I think you're really talking about people who live a double life, and we ought to call a spade here.
Hmm. What would you do about it?
Well, that's a tough question.
Send them to the doctor.
That's where you. That's. Well, I said I wasn't.
Lie down on the couch, please.
I think, Chris. I think that the issue becomes how do you address this problem within the First Amendment? And I think there are two answers to that question. One is that their free speech should be matched by public figures' free speech, and public figures should be free, as obviously Clinton and Lieberman were and Bush is, to denounce Hollywood executives for their duplicity and hypocrisy. And I think the jawboning issue is a valuable way, and in fact I would argue the most valuable way, because nothing works like shame. If you embarrass these people to force them to look at the kind of products they're putting out and the way they're duplicitously marketing them, I think you have some impact. Now, how you deal with the question of the First Amendment, I think, you know, there's a lot of nonsense being sprouted by Gore and Lieberman on this. You do, however, have an issue of duplicitous advertising. And can you regulate that through the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission? The chief compliance officer of the FTC is quoted in the Wall Street Journal this morning as saying, "I don't know how to do that within the First Amendment." So clearly, my own sense is that the way you address this issue is by jawboning and by shaming these people.
Ken Oletta, stand by, if you would. Steve Brill is on the line, founder of Brill's Content, student of politics, too. What's going on here, Steve Brill?
Well, I do think that the FTC and the vice president and the president have identified a potentially effective point. I differ with Ken a little bit on that. I think that there is a legal issue associated with this advertising, but it's also a big shame issue. You know, it's utter hypocrisy to say, well, we have this, you know, this fabulous rating system for movies, and we've put in a rating system for videos, and then suddenly have all these memos surface that say, well, let's target these movies for to kids, and let's target these videos. Every one of us who's a parent knows that, for example, I think the Scream movies are rated R, and there are lots of movies rated R. what was it, American Pie or something. I mean, it's a gross R movie, but that is a kid's movie. And every one of us knows that our kids go to those movies. It's just rank hypocrisy to say that, you know, we're making these products, but we don't want kids to buy them or see them. When that's not what's going on. And to add to the shame issue, I think someone ought to be doing stories about, you know, who are the venture capital people, who are the financial people, who are the banks behind these companies that are putting out these video games.
Are they, in fact, the same people that celebrate Hillary Clinton for a village?
Well, I don't know. And the venture capitalists, they might not be, but I do believe that... That shame works really well. Now there are some people who can't be shamed, but Hollywood people, you know, people in show business with big egos, would not want to be embarrassed this way. And I think that, but the way that works is you have to name real names of actual people who are the people who are profiting from this. I've often said, in fact, I've written that, you know, one of the ways you would improve television instantly is that whenever NBC did a really crappy show, if at the end of the show you listed the chief executive of the company that has ultimate authority for this program being on the air, in this case, Jack Welch, if it's an NBC show, or if the Washington Post Company owns a local television station and they do Jerry Springer, at the end of that show, it should say, this portion of Jerry Springer is brought to you, courtesy of, Catherine Graham and Donald Graham. And that would have a little bit of embarrassment effect.
Bernard Weinraub, I wonder, what does it mean to Hollywood that Joe Lieberman, a middle-of-the-road Democrat from Connecticut, has joined the sort of Bob Dole bandwagon to shame Hollywood?
Well, let me just say before I answer that I kind of disagree, because I think people in Hollywood are really beyond shame. And I don't think you can really shame people. I don't think that's possible. The bottom line is money. And if something violent earns a lot of money, no matter how you shame them, they will be making more violent films. It's as simple as that. In terms of Joe Lieberman, I think in the very beginning, what's interesting about that is that when he was first nominated, there were a lot of people in the entertainment business who were really upset, and they felt that it was a very negative thing for the entertainment business. They have all come around now, even though he has not changed his positions at all, because they obviously feel that the election of Gore and Lieberman is more important than the election of Bush. And I think there has been a real sea change in terms of Lieberman, having nothing to do with Lieberman, but having to do with their own views on politics.
There's a Bush Republican in Hollywood, Tom Strickler, who's been quoted before this, but after the nomination of Joe Lieberman, saying in so many words that the Democrats could have selected Idi Amin as vice president and Hollywood still would have welcomed him. They're just shamelessly wedded to the Democratic Party. We've been trying to decode and sort of follow the money in this campaign season and figure out what these interests get out of the candidates they own lock, stock, and barrel. What does Hollywood get for this?
I could be wrong here, but I think what Hollywood really gets, what some of the moguls really get, is access. I don't think they want anything from the government. I think they love having the invitation to the, maybe it sounds silly to you, but they want to have those invitations to the White House. They want to have the president come and stay at their home. They want to be important. And a lot of, well, not that there are that many moguls, but the idol of a lot of people here is Lou Wasserman, who had that access, who's now in his late 80s.
Lou Wasserman, who made Ronald Reagan the man he...
Who made Ronald Reagan, but he was sort of the, he was the power broker in terms of not just politics, but labor relations and the movie business. And he was Mr. Democrat, but he was singular. And now you have people like Jeffrey Katzenberg and others who want to step into his shoes, and what they want is access. What they want is to be close to this kind of power.
But you see, Bernie, Chris, if I can just jump in.
Ken?
But I think Bernie is making the argument as to why shame would work. Because these people are vain. Because
they
want
won't
that.
Get access to that.
Pardon? Yeah, they, because of that vanity and that desire for access, they can be shamed.
I think they would want, above all, a president who cares as much about them and thinks they're as beautiful as they believe they are, as Bill Clinton has for 8 years. I mean, who thinks that Sharon Stone and Barbara Streisand are as wise and important and consultable as he's made them?
No, I think Clinton has become a heroic figure to many of the people in that community, despite, you know, Monica Lewinsky and everything else. I mean, he is someone who is...
Or maybe because of it.
He might make a great producer, a studio chief. Who knows?
Well, in fact, Clinton may be angling for a job down the road here, too.
Well, there's a symbiosis that, as a reporter years ago, I mean, I observed in a different time between, famously, Gary Hart and Warren Beatty. I mean... Gary Hart wanted to learn about sex, and Warren Beatty wanted to learn about power, and they were inseparable, and I think they still are. But that's there is this sort of emotional convergence that may be even bigger than the business side, if you know what I'm saying.
There is a definite convergence there, and I think that each side is infatuated with the other, especially, you know, President Clinton. But I think Hollywood moguls are infatuated with Washington because of the whole power side of it, and that's what really interests them.
Would you stand by for calls, please? Bernard Weinrub, Ken Auletta, and Steve Brill. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Democrats in Hollywood connection. Carol is on the line.
Yes. I must say that this whole thing, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I have voted Democrat from the very first moment I could, is inducing me not to vote for Gore and Lieberman. I'm not going to vote for Bush, don't worry. First of all, we have Tipper Gore, who brought us censorship in the music business. Then Joe Lieberman, who implies that I cannot be moral because I am not religious. And then we have this obviously hypocritical attack on Hollywood. It's obviously hypocritical because Gore and Lieberman are not even bothering to address the root cause of the issue, not even bothering to do it.
And the root cause is?
Well, there are a number of root causes, but I think the most important one is the pattern of ownership in the entertainment industry, in the book industry, etc. These companies are now part of very large conglomerates, which are business corporations. They are not movie corporations. The movie heads, you've been talking about the movie heads and the moguls as if they had absolute final power over what movies they produce, and they don't. They are now, the large movie studios are now required to show a great deal of profit, much more profit than they necessarily were in the past, and in a different sort. Just like the television shows are these days, the movie companies are pressured by the need to maintain the stock price of their parent corporation.
Carol, wait just a minute. I mean, what is your own reaction to the sort of the moral tone of the...
Oh, I think it's just total hypocrisy.
No, of the movie page and of the movie industry.
Well, I don't have the money to go to movies, so I don't.
But Carol, but there's another question. Why can't you equally condemn both sides? Why can't you?
Ken Auletta, thank you.
Why can't you condemn the hypocrisy of politicians, but also at the same time not neglect the hypocrisy of the Hollywood people?
Well, the hypocrisy of the Hollywood people lies in... I'm not sure where their hypocrisy lies. They're simply responding to what their bosses tell them to do. Now, what they want to do with their money in their off time, what politician they want to support in their off time is their own business. Just
you
as
too.
It is mine and yours.
You're too kind.
But what is hypocritical about a political leader saying that, you know, these products are...
Because
they're terrible. They're bad for the culture.
Because they don't follow that with any suggestions to do anything about it. They don't say antitrust division of the Justice Department.
The antitrust division, if you broke up all those companies, that doesn't mean they would produce better products.
It means that they would be able to produce more diverse products. Think about what's happened in
publishing.
Some
of the smallest companies in the world are the ones producing... the game videos for teenagers that are the
games
most violent.
I don't know about. I'm not. I can't speak to games. But think about what's happened in publishing, where we have so many midline authors being dropped, where so many publishers these days are going to the huge blockbusters for which they pay huge advances, not all of which are made back, and in which we have a narrowing. Although we have more books, we have a narrowing of the topic of the books and a narrowing of the marketing of the books. The same thing has happened in movies, and the same thing has happened in music, and it's largely because of the ownership of those corporations.
Carol, your point is taken. Bust up the media trusts and see what happens. It'll take a while. Steve Brill, could I just ask you, or Catalina too, what is left for George Bush, and Dick Cheney for that matter, to say about Hollywood in this campaign?
Probably just me too. I mean, I don't know. We haven't heard anything from Dick Cheney. He's probably at a Chamber of Commerce in Wilmington, Delaware today or something.
Covered by four people. His wife has been outspoken on this issue and is testifying tomorrow before the Senate on the issue, as are some others, including, I think, Joe Lieberman.
Lynn Cheney was sort of a cultural watchdog at the National Endowment. What would her take be on Hollywood?
It would be the same as Lieberman's, basically, and Bill Bennett's, that these people are excessive and they don't take into account children and parents' difficulty in raising children and the influence that violence or sex has on children's behavior. The tough question becomes, what do you do about it? Now, there have been, in fairness to Lieberman and Gore in the Clinton administration, they, for instance, several years ago came forth with the idea of a V-chip in your television sets, so that a parent would be empowered to police or try and police what their children watch on television. Some think that's censorship. I don't know how it's censorship. It's just basically empowering parents to be able to help make decisions for their children, particularly young children.
The other interesting thing politically is the Republicans are, or at least a lot of them, are remarkably inconsistent on this. They want to jawbone Hollywood, and there you run up against the First Amendment. Where you don't run up against the First Amendment as much is the question of marketing of tobacco products. And there, they have, they don't want to, they pretty much, by and large, don't want to mess with tobacco.
Stand by. We're talking about the Democrats' war on Hollywood, maybe a phony war. They're old friends and will be into the foreseeable future. 1-800-423-8255. George is on the line.
Yeah, first thing is the best essay that I know about censorship and self-censorship is by Ursula K. Le Guin, the science fiction writer, in her book, The Language of the Night. And I believe the title is The Stalin in the Heart, where she talks about the internalization of censorship. And maybe perhaps this is what it's about. And we should also read Guy Debord and The Society of the Spectacle to understand why violence and sex becomes more and more spectacular in a consumer capitalist culture. But you asked the question, Chris, what does Hollywood want from the Democrats? And it seems very clear that what Hollywood wants from the Democrats, what the business of the creative community wants from the Democrats and from Washington, is control over intellectual property. You know, every time Mickey
Mouse, sounds right. Go
Mickey
ahead.
Mouse comes up to be on the cusp of being in the public domain, all of a sudden copyright gets extended another 20 years. This summer, a few months ago, there was a two-line or a one-line change in a law, and the Recording Industry of America all of a sudden made all of the musicians who write the music into work-for-hire artists, so they did not any longer have copyright control over their own recordings. I believe that's
George. I think you're moving us in the right direction. I mean, we're getting toward sort of Napster issues, internet issues, who owns what issues, and who's going to protect copyright. We're also talking about, let's remember, a world industry.
Of course.
And a huge export industry.
Of course. And this goes into what Lori Garrett was talking about yesterday. When you change how people eat, when you McDonald'ize food all around the world, what is that doing in terms of public health? You know, it has the diet, the intellectual diet has a relationship to the physical diet. You know, spectacular consumer lowest common denominator society, which is now global, you know, wants to be controlled, it seems, by a few corporations, by a few main people, and it all wants to be the same one thing without any diversity that's out there.
Canaletta, is George getting warm, do you think?
Oh, I think the copyright issue is, and intellectual property rights is at the heart of what people in Hollywood, and I don't mean just studios. I mean it's television, it's books, it's videos. They care passionately about, and because of things like the internet, this is things like the Napster trial. This is a huge and burgeoning issue that will not go away, and they have a major interest in seeing the legislation protects them.
Steve Brill?
Mm-hmm.
Does this sound right?
Well, that's obviously the big issue, and it's a hard to understand issue. It's sort of the classic issue where lobbying and inside access really works, because it's a complicated, unsoundbiteable issue. But everyone has a stake, and it's not simply Hollywood. It's people who make software. It's any kind of intellectual property, and they're all pretty much on the same side of it.
Bernie Weinrob, they also know they've got the First Amendment there in terms of interference with so-called free expression, but what's the corporate translation of that? Is there a simple one?
There's no simple one. I think, people obviously do not want to be what they call censored, but censorship covers a wide range of things, and I don't think there's any hard and fast rule. They just want to have total freedom and total access.
Bernie Weinrob, thank you. Steve Brill and Canaletta, thank you. We're talking about the Democrats' maybe phony war on Hollywood, the threat of censoring or restricting advertising, but what is to be done about commercial media, violent, oversexual media for kids? This is The Connection. We'll be back. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. From Boston University, this is WB.
Senator, do you think those of us in the entertainment business need government help in determining limits on the amount of sex and violence in today's films and television programs?
The funny thing is how lousy most of your stuff is. You know, you make violent films and you make dirty films and you make, family films, but just most of them are not very good, are they? Funny, just so many smart people could work so hard on them and spend all that money on them and make so much money on them. Where do you think it is?
There must be the money, huh? It must be the money. Turns everything to crap, but Jesus Christ, how much money do you guys really need?
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the War on Hollywood Connection. That was Warren Beatty, Mr. Hollywood, in his own movie Bullworth, talking about sex and violence and what a lot of brains it seems to take to make lousy movies. Vice President Gore and his running mate are talking about a crackdown on Hollywood if Hollywood won't clean up its own act. It's something new for Democrats who've long been allied in every imaginable way with the stars and the rainmakers of Hollywood. What's to make of this war? Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255, or you can join us online at theconnectiononeword.org. Peter Bart joins us from Hollywood. He's the editor-in-chief of the industry Bible Variety magazine. And Martin Kaplan, who runs the Norman Lear Center at the University of Southern California, who's been a big shot in Mondale politics and Disney movies. Marty Kaplan, score this war. What's going on?
Well, I think the politicians involved certainly sense that the public opinions are on their side. If you're a parent, if you're a consumer, you can't help noticing that the culture has coarsened over the last generation, and that the marketing efforts to reach people who are otherwise defenseless, like small children, has brilliantly advanced into every corner of life, from fast food franchises to television to radio jingles. So parents, voters are somewhat concerned or up in arms, depending on who you ask about the quality of life that results from the pervasiveness of lousy culture. On the other hand, those parents and those children are voting with their dollars and making it very successful. If violent films were to fail, if films with sexual content or rude language were to fail, or music, people wouldn't produce it. So it's not just that the Hollywood culture, as Ken Auletta said earlier, was schizophrenic. The public is schizophrenic, too. We both want the stuff because we vote with our dollars, and we deplore it because we egg our politicians on to say, stop me before I buy it again.
That sounds reasonable. Peter Bart, who in Hollywood hears this kind of pressure, and what does anybody propose to do about it?
Well, I think the pressure is heard loud and clear. But basically, I think this campaign by Al Gore represents what the New York Times in today's editorial called pandering. I think it's the lowest form of pandering for Republican votes. You know, daddy knows best. The government is going to start a thought police movement. And through their thought police, movies magically are going to be cleaned up. You know, you go into any theater playing an art picture, and you see the place absolutely filled with parents who have brought their young children. Obviously, they're voting to see these movies. They're voting with their dollars. So I think the whole thing is ill-advised and is going to be very alienating to a lot of people who traditionally were Democrats.
I presume parents who take the kids to our movies feel a little grubby about it, and maybe that's what Al Gore is simply trying to identify with, a feeling of something close to shame or shabbiness.
Well, I took my kids to R movies. I mean, what's wrong with Saving Private Ryan? Many of the great movies of the last generation were R movies. And I think that to lift the industry's self-anointed categories to some sort of gospel is just preposterous.
Peter Bart, we've been trying to dope out the money trail here, or the interest trail, or the infatuation trail. What is this connection all about, Hollywood and the Democrats?
I think that that, too, is illusory. If you really break down the companies, for example, you find a company like News Corp is hardcore Republican with Rupert Murdoch. You find Vivendi and Sony are foreign-owned and basically neutral, MGM. Is also out there. So much tension is riveted on DreamWorks because of Geffen, Spielberg, and Katzenberg. But I think people get the impression outside that the Democrats sort of own Hollywood. I really don't think that's true anymore. Like all prosperous towns with a lot of wealthy young people in it, I think there's a strong Republican base in Hollywood that's going to grow.
And yet there is something special with the Democrats, is there not? I mean, it may not be primarily about money, but there is an infatuation, and there also is an interest.
There's a cultural link. I mean, Barbara Streisand is sort of the ultimate cultural Democrat. I think she still thinks that FDR is the president.
Well, she surely wishes. Marty Kaplan, what do you make of the interest deal here? Who's doing what for whom in all of this, in all of this romancing?
Well, I think the companies have as their principal interest profit, and they will do everything they can in order to achieve that. And having access to not only the White House but also to the key legislative committees on the Hill and the regulatory enforcement agencies, all this is terribly important to them. And so they will contribute regularly and generously to anybody, irrespective of political party, to make sure that their lobbyist phone calls get returned. And as my friend Peter Bart just said, they are equal opportunity contributors by and large. General Electric contributes more to Republicans than to Democrats and topped a recent list. Disney gives more to Republicans than to Democrats. The National Association of Broadcasters contributes 3-1 Republicans to Democrats. That's possibly because in recent years Republicans have had the control of Congress. And if that were to shift to the Democrats, I'm sure they'd move their money to the Democrats. I don't think it's ideological. I think it's all about a calculation of self-interest.
1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the Democrats' I keep wanting to say phony war on Hollywood. We're talking about the free speech issues, the profitable speech issues. 1-800-423-TALK makes the connection. Or you can reach us at theconnection1word.org. Nick is on the line.
Hello, Chris.
Welcome, Nick.
Well, I just...
It sounds like my friend Nick Johnson.
That's right, former FCC commissioner, and I just wanted to throw
great
into
media.
You've got the right people, and they're on the right subject. Of course it's about money, and as we read in this morning's paper, same thing's true in tobacco. You can addict 13- and 14-year-olds. We all know that, if you can make money by selling violence to little kids, and nobody will prevent you from doing it, you... make the rationalization you need to do anything to increase the bottom line. It's as simple as that. But what I wanted to throw in was our experience in the 1970s with the National Citizens Committee for Broadcasting, with which you're familiar, Chris, and we did in fact produce a reduction in violence for, I think, the first time and possibly the only time in the history of American television, and we did it through Ken Auletta's suggestion about shaming. We identified by recording the incidents of violence and who was advertising on those programs, we identified what we called America's 10 bloodiest corporations and publicized the names of the CEOs and could put as many as 300,000 letters on their desk at the office.
Now, this was this, you were out of your FCC office by the time this happened. This was done as citizens, not as government.
Yeah, this was done as chair of the National Citizens Committee for Broadcasting.
Would you have done it as a regulator?
Probably not. But the point is, here is a mechanism, and it does work, and the CEOs put pressure on the ad agencies, and the ad agencies put pressure on Hollywood, and the net result was a reduction in levels of violence. And then I left Washington and came back home to Iowa, and levels of violence went back up again. But they've constantly come to Washington. I mean, this goes back over 50 years. They constantly come to Washington and promise they're going to reduce levels of violence, and then the next year they increase them.
So what would you do about trash media at this moment, Nick Johnson?
Well, I think if you want to reduce it, that's a, and you're looking for a mechanism that can do it, that can do it.
Citizens Action, sort of Mothers Against Drug Driving kind of stuff.
Yeah, except Mothers Against Drug Driving, I'm not sure. Do they boycott or indicate?
Well, they raise hell as citizens.
Well, I know they raise hell. It's not just about raising hell. I mean, I love Patty Chayefsky's movie Network. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. But you need to also know where do you put the pressure and how do you do it. There are intricate scientific strategies to bringing about change in the behavior of very powerful corporations, which is what Ralph Nader spent the last 40 years doing, and part of the reason why the Green Party has him running as president this year.
But stand by. I want to hear from Peter Bart. What would Hollywood feel about, how would Hollywood feel about having to listen to this kind of feedback?
I can tell you that before Peter talks.
Peter Bart.
I think we're a responsible pressure group of the sort that Mr. Johnson describes to single out particular examples of, say, in video games, in recorded music, as well as film, specific cases where a film, an extremely violent film, is advertised egregiously in excess on kids' programs. And we're talking about kids' programs. We're not talking about Friends. Then I think that you'd find a real responsiveness. I think that sort of approach is the way a democratic society deals with this problem, not through a government thought police.
Are you ready to lead it, Nick Johnson?
Well, right now I'm on the local school board, as you know, and I'm taking on K-12 issues, and that seems to be a handful. But at some point I may get back to that.
We may have to clone you, Nick.
I may say, in fairness, the downside of this is it can lead to the kind of thing that Red Channels represented in the 50s. I mean, Jerry Falwell was also interested in putting pressure on advertisers.
You're talking about a McCarthyist sort of anti-com.
Yeah, I mean, this advertiser pressure works, it can work for anybody. So it is a risky strategy in that case, in that sense.
But Chris, this is Marty.
The most useful
form of pressure is not shame, which I applaud, but rather voting with your dollars. If consumers don't want these kinds of products, they shouldn't spend money on them. There was a television station in Chicago that put Jerry Springer on the air as a commentator, and the ratings plummeted because that local market said, no, we don't want that, and in 24 hours he was off the station. These companies are hair trigger responsive to consumer supply and demand. So,
well, and I'm sure the gun companies would be too if we made guns available freely over the counter to young kids, and then we'd watch the market and see which ones were most popular. And the guns that didn't sell as well probably would change their design, and we could also offer alcohol and illegal drugs and prostitution and all kinds of things and see how the marketplace would work. But the fact of the matter is that we have limitations, particularly with regard to what we let children have access to.
Of course. Of course. I don't dispute that. In fact, I think the brilliance of the FTC study is to focus on marketing. It's not about the muddy area of the impact on societal crime of crime in entertainment. It's about what the marketing plans are of video games, music, and movies. Do they, in fact, go to Nickelodeon or kids' magazines to market to a target audience younger than the ones that the ratings are for? Those kinds of practices you can look at quite empirically, and there's no question that children constitute a special class of consumers.
And they represent multi-hundred billion dollar markets.
Nick Johnson, I just I want to draw you out on this just because you've always been a staunch First Amendment guy and a regulator and a sort of citizen activist. I mean, there are a lot of different pressures here. You've always distinguished between and you tried to decode free speech campaigns when they're just a kind of fig leaf for profitable speech interests. How would that be useful here? I mean, to to tell Hollywood, you're not talking about free speech, you're talking about profitable speech, rather shamelessly.
Well, shamelessly is right, but, you know, by definition, what these global corporations, when Time and Warner merged, we asked them why, and they said because someday there'll be five firms controlling all the world's media, and we want to be one of them. And we now have, I believe, five music firms that control over 95% of all the music in the world. I mean, this is about money. There's no question about that. As someone noted earlier, the intellectual property issues whether it's the World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva or it's the United States Congress in Washington, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar global industry here that is trying to capture more and more of that profit. And in the process, put a lot of restrictions on the folks that want to give their own stuff away for free. As a matter of fact, so
well, it used to be, and maybe
it's
this
all
is
profitable speech from their view.
Well, this used to be considered an antitrust issue, and maybe it ought to be again. Nick Johnson, thank you. It's always a pleasure to hear from Nick Johnson, former FCC commissioner in the Johnson era. 1-800-423-8255. Tom is on the line.
Hi. I'd just like to make the point that movies don't kill people. Guns kill people. And this whole issue is a big smokescreen for, and the true hypocrites are the Republicans like Bill Bennett who criticize and want to censor the movie industry and do nothing about gun control. And that's what's killing people. If the movies showed people shooting up things, killing everyone, and that's what's happening out there. Let's take care of the gun issue instead, and let's do some activism there and not waste all our energy on movies that simply reflect what's actually happening in society.
Well, that's why Hollywood gave us Charlton Heston, sort of who can lobby a multi-purpose Hollywood lobbyist. Tom, point taken. 1-800-423-8255. Roy is on the line.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe as far as the liberal connection with Hollywood is concerned, it's on an individual basis. People still remember the blacklist. A lot of people's careers were destroyed utterly. And the memory of that sort of thing can be a very strong driving force when it comes to choices made, whether it's Democrat or Republican. And as far as money is concerned, where do 13-year-old children get their money? From their parents. You know,
stick with the blacklisting era, Roy. What is your point? It's an interesting one. If you're a Hollywood veteran and still remembering the pressure and the economic pain and the personal pain of that time when Hollywood was, when Washington was beating up on Hollywood and having real effect, what would that effect be today?
That would have a continuing reverberation.
But to what effect do you think?
To keep the pressure on people, allowing freedom to do projects that they want. Unfortunately, as has been said, the larger and larger corporate structures are making the pitch for basically garbage productions. But the best productions are smaller, independent things that are frequently tough to swallow sometimes. They bring up social issues, political issues. That
Peter Bart, you've been around a while out there. Does Hollywood remember the blacklist and that kind of pressure? Does it figure in what Hollywood's doing and thinking today?
Sadly, most of the players in Hollywood today have completely forgotten about the blacklist. I think it was exactly 50 years ago last year that it really began to gain credence. And I know Variety did a big special section about it. And I got calls from some of the young agents and managers saying, what? Did that happen here? Well, you know, if I may take this full circle, though, back to your opening clip from Warren Beatty, I think Warren made a point there that we should remember, and that is that a bigger threat than violence is sheer mediocrity, and that if there would be a helpful rating, I think it would be M for mediocre.
Hmm. Who wants to propose it?
I can't think of anybody who would.
Well, it might be an interesting Gore Lieberman pitch, wouldn't it?
I think so. I think their rating would be S for shrill.
Marty Kaplan, what about a mediocre or just sort of just wasting your time kind of rating for Hollywood stuff?
I think every Hollywood executive dreams of the bottom line when greenlighting a project, and that's what they have in mind. And whether it is considered highbrow, middlebrow, lowbrow, mediocre, classy, elite, all that doesn't matter as much as what this season's public appetite happens to be. One year, the movies will be period dramas and romances. Another year, they'll be violent action exploitation pictures. Hollywood chases the market. And it really doesn't care what a kind of independent or elite version of what taste is or ought to be. It only cares about success.
Vice President Gore is going to get on to some important parties now with Hollywood personalities. Is it over? Can Hollywood, is this little game complete? Marty Kaplan?
I don't think so. I think that they've gotten something, and I think it's moving. I think that, yes, in a campaign, it'll be replaced by the next thing and the next thing. Today, it's the deceptive marketing practices using subliminal advertising on the part of the Republican National Committee, sneaking in the word rat in the middle of Al Gore's prescription plan.
Hidden persuaders, Shades of Vance Packard. I think people had forgotten that.
Well, exactly.
Those techniques.
But the connection is marketing. That in that case and in the case of the FTC's report, the issue is how is it that people are attempting to persuade people to vote, either as voting with their dollars or voting as political creatures.
Enormously interesting. Marty Kaplan, thank you for joining us. Marty Kaplan runs the Norman Lear Center at the University of Southern California. Thank you, Peter Bart, editor of Variety magazine. Thank you also, K. Ken Auletta, Steve Brill, and Bernie Weinraub for joining us earlier in the hour. Listeners, you can continue the Washington to Hollywood conversation on our website at theconnection.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation. This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Quadstone Predictive Marketing Software, delivering customer intelligence solutions so companies can implement effective CRM initiatives on the web at quadstone.com. By Masterworks, Inc., a provider of e-business technology consulting.